Blog Talk Radio.
Our community have become toxic waste. Those in high places are planning to remove the toxic waste. And while we flitter and live this frivolous, foolish life, seeking pleasure from our bodies and pleasure from the bodies of others, and seeking to be famous and wealthy in this world, to be used by the power to make our people think that if you go to school and work hard, you too can be successful. That's a lie. I don't give a damn how many of you go to school and work hard. They select a few out of the mass to deceive the rest that this house is not your house. And you are going to have to think about a house of your own, because white America, listen to me good, man, cannot support you any longer. White America cannot give jobs to her millions of unemployed, much less ours. Did you hear me? Elijah Muhammad told us in the 60s we should pool our resources and get farmland, because there is no freedom without land. You remember those teachings? He said that the time of separation had come, and that we are going to have to think about building a nation of our own. You, in the 60s, you were ready to say it's nation time. You don't say that no more, because you have been deceived into thinking that inclusion into this is your salvation. This that you want to be included in has no future. None.
Greetings and assalamu alaikum. Welcome to tonight's Blog Talk Radio Show, the Time to Leave Blog Talk Radio Show. This is the show where if you are at all interested in moving to or creating a society where you can control the progress, the security, the safety of your society, a separate society, a society of your own people, this is the show that you can listen to. We have columns, we have guests, we have regulars that can answer your questions, and we have people who have lived in and grown up in separate Muslim societies. As a matter of fact, our guest tonight, we have a very special guest that has contributed much of his personal experience in growing up in the Nation of Islam. And so he is uniquely qualified to talk to us on this particular topic for tonight: city and county politics in building independent communities. So I see our guest, Brother Leroy Muhammad, is in the queue. Brother Leroy, if you can press that one and I'll open your mic. There, okay, yes, sir.
As-salamu
alaykum. Wa alaykum salam, Brother Leroy. How are you doing, sir?
Oh, by Allah's grace and mercy, I'm doing fine, dear brother. How about yourself?
I am well, by the grace of Allah. I'm glad you took the time to get on our show and talk to us and address us about this topic. But before we get going, I'm going to ask you, brother, how is your book coming?
Well, of course, you know, like most of us, 2020 was very trying, so I didn't make as much progress as I wanted to, but I'm back at it. So inshallah, you know, 2021 will be the year that I complete what I'm writing, and inshallah, you know, I'll be able to share it.
Oh, praise is due to Allah. When you get your, get it out there and put it out there, let us know, because I'm going to give me a signed copy.
Oh, yes, sir. Absolutely. You'll be the first
yes,
one,
sir.
Dear brother.
Oh, praise is due to Allah. Yes, sir. So as I said to you earlier, or I sent information to you, Brother Livor, at a backdrop right now, well, first of all, anybody who's watching any television right now should not be surprised why we're trying to enlighten our people on starting our own societies. We live in a
That's
society
right.
where we are directly impacted by the national leadership, but we don't have any control. And so we need to, you know, come together and start discussing and planning things. And one aspect of planning, Brother Livor, is one that I don't hear a lot of. And we kind of talked about it in our last conversation. You shared with us the importance of how the immigrant communities have their businesses. Mm-hmm. And with their businesses,
yeah.
they're able to elect officials that
yes.
are able to represent their community's desires and their needs and their wishes. And, you know, as we strive to try to build communities either in rural areas like we are now or in cities where we're in great numbers and we have a lot of potential, what should we keep in mind? What's the importance of keeping in mind the politics? You know, as Muslims, a lot of times, you know, we haven't participated in the political system. And
correct.
And, you know, what should we do? What is in your opinion, what should be our position as we strive to build our community?
Well, Brother Carlton, you know, we did talk about Detroit is a very unique place because of, you know, like most urban centers, Detroit has a diverse cultural presence here. It's very multicultural, but, you know, unlike other places, Detroit's multicultural presence isn't homogenous. It's not completely blended together. You have different communities here, like you have a large Arab population, you have a large East Indian population, you have a large Latino population, of course, black and white. But unlike other places, these communities are operating independently as a people in Detroit. You can see that probably more pronounced in Metro Detroit than you can anywhere else. And so we don't have just a small Mexican or Spanish speaking area of the city. We have a large, very large area that you know, they control. We don't have a small section of Detroit or Metro Detroit where the Arab population controls. They literally control two cities, one Hamtramck and the other one is Dearborn, Michigan. And so we've had a chance to see how that works for people who came into power. And we understand that it was very intentional. It was strategic. And unfortunately for us, for our people, black people, we've enjoyed some success politically, but we never fully captured what we've seen these other communities capture. And the biggest example of that happening was the Nation of Islam prior to 1975, when we did control a section of the city. But since then, we haven't been able to duplicate that level of success in that way. We've had other success, of course, but the physical creation of communities, we haven't had that. And so there is a process that we've seen play out, and I think that, you know, it's important that we study it and duplicate it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. For my listeners that may not be familiar with you, Brother Livor, if you could share with them, you know, briefly, your, your synopsis of your life growing up in Detroit as a young man prior to 75 in the Nation.
Yes, sir. Well, my parents joined the Nation in in Detroit in the late 60s. My father actually he joined up, his brother joined in the 60s, and my uncle Danny was the first one of those, and he was recruited by Malcolm X. And this was a long, long time ago. So my Uncle Danny was in the Nation, I think, in the late 50s. And eventually he convinced his, I believe it was 11 of them, out of the 11 children, he convinced 10 of his siblings.
Man.
To the Nation. So,
wow.
So, yeah, so they... So it was a big mass movement to the Nation from that family. Then my mother, she lived in Long Branch, New Jersey, and her family was joining the Nation as well, and totally independent of my father. And she had a large family. She didn't have quite as many of her siblings join, but I think she had three brothers that registered. And so they got married, and I was born in the Nation of Islam. And I didn't get a chance to, you know, I was like 5 years old when the Nation went into its decline. But I can say that I experienced the Nation of Islam as very vivid, you know, clear in my memory of what it was like to exist in my own world. And I think because I was so young, I didn't know anything else. And so I didn't recognize the existence of two separate realities. One, you know, where the white man and controlled the world. I just only understood the universe from the position of being in the Nation of Islam. And so when the Nation fell, you know, I watched a lot of movies about end of the world scenarios, and that's exactly what that felt like. It felt like the world was ending. Because everything that I understood about life, everything that I understood about society and the social practice of Muslims, everything ended abruptly. And so it was traumatic. But, you know, after that, as the 70s continued, some people, like survivors after an apocalypse, some people started coming back together. And we were able to salvage a little bit of what we had. And, you know, so I was thankful for that. And eventually my family started, after the minister stood up, my family started coming back around. And I decided on my own to come back to the mosque, you know, after high school. And I brought my mom and my sister back. And, you know, it was a joyous thing.
Praise be to Allah. Thanks for sharing that,
sir.
Brother. Being that you were so young, you may not have been able to directly be involved or have firsthand knowledge of any political actions or movements or involvement. Can you recall any conversations you may have had with your parents or aunts or uncles or any brothers and sisters that may have talked about in terms of how the local Detroit Muslim businesses or mosques may have had any positions or interactions with the local political officials?
Well, I did. So, you know, I had that conversation, as a matter of fact, very recently about the Nation of Islam's approach to politics and what our strategy was prior to 75. So I actually had a good conversation with my father, who was a registered brother, FOI, in the ranks. And I spoke to Captain Majid, who was also a lieutenant at that time, directly about this subject. And so they had the same answer, which is that the Nation did not have official people that we placed in the political realm, but we were heavily supportive of those candidates that we thought had our interest at heart. And so, you know, it was mentioned that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that, you know, he admired Adam Clayton Powell Jr.
Right.
and how he represented our people. And we did have, you know, in the table talks with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, you see that we had registered believers that were in high positions politically. I think there was even a brother in Gary, Indiana at some point that was the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
And so the nation definitely had our hand in the political arena. But I think the Honorable Elijah Muhammad had a focus, and that's what the brothers seem to say, that our focus was more on our own in-house and using politics to further our cause, but it wasn't a direct strategy per se to put the Muslims in that in out there to run for office, coming as a directive directly from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Now, of course, we know that we saw more activity after 1975 when the minister stood up, when we had believers that were, you know, running for office, and it seemed like the nation was a little bit more active in that.
Okay.
In backing them.
Yes, sir. So I know one of the key issues with politics is, as you, you know, have a community that's growing, you know, not unlike mm-hmm. prior to 1975 in your Detroit home, it was a growing community where businesses were growing, getting more commercial real estate, getting more residential real estate, issues of zoning, issues of traffic, you know. I know FOI policed ourselves pretty much, but there's also issues on law enforcement, you know, and what can you sell in the street and what can't you sell, and, you know, walking in the street, stuff like that. In fact, we have issues with that, with, you know, some cities.
Right.
FOI arrested. So go ahead.
I'll say something very interesting, Brother Carlton, that Minister Rasul said years back. He told a story about the mayor. Now, you know, Detroit have probably one of the strongest, because I'm from Detroit, I'm going to say the strongest black mayors in U.S. history to me. Of course, you know, there are black men that share that opinion, and Mayor Coleman Young.
Yeah, okay.
So the nation had a big friend in Coleman Young, and he could have been more than just our friend. You know, so our student minister Rasul recounted how he visited the mayor's office once. And during the meeting, the mayor went to his closet inside the mayor's office, and he pulled out a suit out of his closet, and he presented it to Brother Rasul. And he said, "This is one of the suits that Master Farad Muhammad sold to, I think it was one of his aunts."
Wow.
So,
he
knew the significance of what he had, and that's
right.
He kept it in his office, you know. I mean, so yes, in the case of the people of Hamtramck, okay, so they have a large Yemeni population, Muslims from Yemen, and they have a large Bengali population, Muslims from Bangladesh. So what they did is they populated that city. So the immigrants started coming in, you know, from both places. And at first, Hamtramck was heavily Polish. And so the Polish population started moving out, and they were being displaced by the other populations. And so as they grew in population, they grew politically. So, and that happened in Dearborn as well, where the Lebanese population started immigrating into Dearborn, and they started growing politically. So the police force, you started seeing a change in the police force to represent more of who they were. And in the case of both places, you started seeing them rise politically in the city councils and things like that. And so they even make it moves on the mayor's office. So when I was saying earlier that there's a strategy, there's a correlation between population and the politics, because their quality of life is directly related to, you know, their ability to control, like you were saying, the issues of zoning, who's on the police force, funding, and how funds are going to be allocated towards causes. And so they understand those dynamics, and they've used those quite well, you know, for their own benefit.
Wow.
And of course, we can do the same.
Yes, sir. It's interesting when I was thinking, as you were saying, that as black people in general, we have people in political positions. We have people, blacks, in the police force, We have blacks in code enforcement. We have blacks in just about every aspect of civil life. So, in your opinion, why aren't we being served as well and moving forward as well as some of the immigrant communities that may not have as many police officers and had a mayor and civic, you know, positions? So, in your opinion, why would that? Why are they further ahead in having their community than we are?
Well, they have cultural continuity. You know, they know how to unite with one another. You know, so even while they have their own individual aspirations, they still see themselves as a people. So their objectives are one objective. And when they move together. With black people, we're still trying to integrate, of course, into someone else's civilization. And so when we make decisions about the kind of things that are important to us, we are not consciously taking into consideration what's good for our people and ourselves. We tend to think about those issues from what's going on underneath our own roofs. And I think that's a disadvantage. You know, that's even though there's a lot more of us, we aren't working together. So that's an issue. You know, I think the Nation of Islam has been trying to address by identifying us as a nation. And I think that, you know, the entire, you know, struggle that we've been going through, part of that struggle has been a struggle of identity. And I just don't think that we've gotten to where we need to go with that. And so we have not been able to take advantage of our group, that group dynamic like the other people have.
Okay. Yeah, so you mentioned the Nation of Islam. I think about an opportunity for us, an additional opportunity for us to maybe fill in that void in addition to our identity of a nation. If we see that there's a void there, maybe we can encourage people to fill those voids. So we have the nine ministries that cover aspects of that. We also know the values of bringing businesses together, because Dr. Brisley has said, you know, many times that one of the reasons why, you know, foundations of building a community is you have to have businesses, you have to have cash flow. You know,
that's
you got
right.
to be able to, in addition to have representation, you got to have the backing behind it. And so, do you see opportunities for Muslims, the nations, to, you know, go beyond our traditional roles of just being the inspiration and being the protection, to maybe being leaders in directing business opportunities and trying to, you know, use these aspects, use these our skills and our recognition of what's to be done to build our and secure our community.
Right. I believe that's our one of our main focuses. And I've always have admired Dr. Ridgely and what he's, you know, doing, along with, you know, all of the people that are working with him for us to lift ourselves up based on, you know, the work on the farm and trying to build a community in the South. And I think that's exactly the kind of work that we need. We need people in the nation especially to take the lead on us doing that. I mean, this is a system. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad did lay out a methodology. You know, our unity and our rise into power was going to happen based on an actual method. And part of that method is establishing businesses. And part of it is, you know, gaining power in our local political scene. Part of it is owning land. Part of it is even owning a home and being a homeowner. All of that is part of the methodology for growing into power. And I think that the Nation of Islam, because we understand some other things that are also important, we are in the key position, the vanguard position, to take that lead.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So coming back to Detroit in particular, in the Black community in particular, do you see any movement towards Blacks and Muslims and just Blacks in general coming together to do any business moves, like either in the real estate or in the commercial retail businesses?
Yes. There are several projects, you know, that you know, we've been working on. I think we talked about it in one of the shows previous to this one, how you have Muslims that are actively buying property in Michigan and Detroit and looking to do exactly what we're talking about, building communities. So I won't, you know, of course, I'm not going to say exactly who's who and who's buying what, because most of the believers that they're trying to operate under the radar, I'll say, but it's happening. Along with the believers, there are also some of the people who are conscious, I would say, in the community that are doing the same thing. Detroit isn't the same place that it was before, where there was just a bunch of cheap properties all over the place to buy. Unfortunately, that opportunity has passed. So Detroit is still an opportunity, but it's not just so easily, grabbed like it was. You could have done it maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago, even 5 years ago. But it's still happening. We are fighting in Detroit for position because the Detroit real estate scene has turned around some. Other communities are interested in Detroit, and it used to be they were interested in the periphery of the city. Now their attention is all the way at the core. Now it's still, because the population of Detroit is slowly turning, it's still the majority of the people in the city are still Black people. But that's changing every year, because you have flight of Black people leaving the city, and then you have new populations coming in, which are mostly suburban whites and people coming from overseas, of course, coming to the city. So that population change is real, and it's one of the reasons why Detroit had our first white mayor in the last election, because, you know, other communities are right starting. So that was, you know, for us, we hadn't seen that in a lifetime. But, you know, Mayor Duggan is the mayor now, and that's just a sign of the interest that other communities have in Detroit. So maybe all around the world, Detroit is seen in one way, but here, you know, it's seen as a major opportunity. So, but there are still believers like the group that I'm a part of that are actively working to build a nation, a community here in Detroit. And like I said, we're definitely progressing. And I think our particular group will be ready to make an announcement to the believer community pretty soon about a few projects that we're ready to roll out.
Praise be to Allah. Are there any other non-Muslim or not Nation of Islam Black groups that you all see that have a similar objective that maybe you're to partner with or each have like a relationship with?
Yes. It wasn't too long ago that we were approached by, I would say, a group of Muslims from Pakistan, and they specifically wanted to join forces with the Nation of Islam to help build a community. So they were thinking about more of a diverse Muslim community, and so that the interest is definitely there. Now, there's also other communities of Muslims that are Black Muslims in different neighborhoods, and they also have had plans. And like I said, 2020 was difficult for anything, you know, as far as movement. So a lot of things that were on the books, they didn't really see a lot of movement because of the pandemic. But I know these things are happening. So there's an organization called the Muslim Center, and I know that they have plans at some point to build a Muslim community around their campus. And the Nation of Islam, we're pretty close to them. A lot of our functions and events, we hold them at the Muslim Center. And it mostly is a lot of believers from prior to 75 who, you know, decided to go in another direction as far as their belief in Islam. But we're family, so we stay together.
Right.
And so they have some plans to develop a Muslim community in that area. over, and that's closer to where Mosque Number One or Temple Number One used to be in Detroit on Linwood Avenue. They have a place not too far, so within walking distance. And so they wanted to do some things in that neighborhood. And so, yes, yeah, there are plenty of people, and not just the Muslims. There are a lot of people that are revisiting. See, Black people, because we weren't united in vision, there was a, there was an African town movement here before. So we have in Detroit, we have something called Greek town. We have something called Mexican town. Well, the Black people said, well, okay, let's have an African town. And it was shot down by a local government.
What?
So we didn't have... Right.
How does that happen? I mean, is it Negroes that just don't, is it doing their master's biddings, or is it just that our organization is so poor that people who see the potential of that are threatened and step in and squash it?
I think it's exactly what you just said, brother. People step in because Detroit is already Black. And so the idea is we don't, you know how it is. They don't want to see us marry ourselves to any economic push. So they push back, and they came up with a whole bunch of reasons, but none of them really were legitimate. They just didn't want to see it happen, and we didn't have the wherewithal to push it through. But people are revisiting that idea. So, but once again, there has to be that cultural continuity. You know, a Black town, what does that mean? What does that look like? What is the culture of that scene? What does it mean to have a Black town? What type of music? What is that? I mean, we're all over the place. And so that's one of the issues that I think we need to figure out as Black people is culturally, who are we? So we can, when we look to come together to create a place for ourselves, we know what that is. Other communities don't suffer from that. Pakistanis know what Pakistani is, you know, and so Yemeni know, they know what it means to be Yemeni, and the Lebanese know what that means, but we don't know what Black means. And so we just need to figure out some things. And like I said, that's why I believe the nation, our push is unique among our people because we do have a culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we could figure out a way to impose that and create place around our culture, the rest of our people will fold into our culture. And I think that's part of the plan.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, brother, we're halfway through the program. We're going to pause for station identification. This is the Time to Leave Blog Talk Radio Show. And our guest is Brother Leroy Muhammad. We're talking on city and county politics in the building of independent communities, as well as we're also talking about Brother Leroy is lending his experience and background of growing up prior to 1975. If you have a question or a comment, you can get into the queue by pressing the one on your dial, and we'll open up your mic and get you in. But meanwhile, we're going to get back to our guest, Brother Leroy. So, Brother Leroy, I mentioned to you that recently Dr. Ridgely ran for the chairman of the county commissioners for Terrell County, which is the county that held Muhammad's farm. And
yes, sir.
He ran for a couple of reasons. One, because that we weren't getting, the people in the area weren't getting treated, you know, as valuable assets. And number
right.
two, we were being disrespected because, you know, we've been here for 25 years and they are making a distinct effort not to fix the roads near Muhammad's farms, which impacts our productivity. And so
right.
Dr. tried to work with them and tried to be, you know, diplomatic, but he sees the only way to do it is to put them out the office. And so he had what I call his introductory bid. He didn't win, but he's known now. And so a lot of times in politics, you don't win the first time, but you keep trying and eventually you get in. And so that being said, I don't know if you noticed the news in Detroit or not. In Georgia, there's a lot of Black groups, Black individuals coming together and purchasing land. You know, one group in particular made CNN. And I wanted to ask, is that something that is happening around Detroit? Does Detroit have that kind of land where people are doing that? are those kind of discussions taking place, or is that something that's characteristic maybe just as a hero around the rural South?
Well, I can tell you for sure we do know about that, what's going on down South. I mean, that's
okay.
Definitely caught the attention more than the Southern people. I would say something similar has happened in the sense, but not necessarily land, probably more buildings and property here.
Okay.
Where you're seeing that same type of thing. But land, I know for sure we've definitely paid attention. We are paying attention to the fact that a lot of people are buying large, you know, swaths of land down South, and then specifically in Georgia.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And we have a caller. Caller with the last four digits, 5586. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Assalamu alaikum. This is Brother William calling from Albany, Georgia.
Walaikum salam, Brother William.
Yes, sir. Brother mentioned a mayor out of Gary, Indiana. I grew up in Gary, Indiana, and that was Mayor Richard Gordon Hatcher that you were referencing.
Yes,
and
sir.
What I would like to say to Brother is, having grown up in that all-black city environment under Mayor Hatcher, he was the only mayor that I knew for over 20 years, is that when he first came in, and I was a child, of course, when he first came in and began to do things for the city of Gary, a couple of things happened. One, the state of Indiana, which is where cities and local municipalities get their resources to be able to do things for the citizens of their city. The state of Indiana basically cut off Gary from being able to have resources to be able to maneuver and do things for Gary. And as you may know, Gary went down as the steel industry declined, as well as the state withdrawing all of its support from Gary.
Right.
The second thing that I saw occur is that while we had black school board, black superintendent, black mayor, black fire chief, police chief, you name it, the whole city was black. But what I saw as I grew up later on, those underneath Mayor Hatcher, from my estimation, began to let personal desires and what they may have seen going on in surrounding white communities creep into the way that they did things in the black community.
Right.
They began to, you know, have the siphoning off of different resources that were available. They began to not do things above board. So, you know, hope, I'm thinking that because the communities that you are mentioning over there in Detroit have that spiritual base, that moral fortitude and turpitude may ward off some of that, you know, trying to do what you see white people doing, you know, because their unwritten policy, as we saw with Mayor Marion Barry out in D.C. and others, is do as we say, not as we do. But then if we do what we think that they do, they're coming to get us for doing that. And what they do is wrong anyway, so we shouldn't even participate in it. So I would just encourage everyone not to, you know, be quick to try to do what you think are successful ways for white communities, because
that
doesn't seem to be the way for us in black communities. Thank you for listening. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Thank you, Brother William. Brother Leroy, you want to make a comment on our brother's comment?
I think Brother is exactly right. You know, we saw the same thing in Detroit. And one of the things when in 1967, everybody probably knows or have heard something about the riots that broke out in Detroit.
Yes, sir.
And it was, you know, called an insurrection. It was really an uprising. So a lot of the white people were scared away from the city. But then when they realized that black people were going to take over the city of Detroit, they intentionally like a military tactic. They intentionally destroyed some of the industrial power in the city. They intentionally left. And they really wanted to sink Detroit. So they would joke about the last person, you know, leaving the city, turn the lights out, because they expected Detroit to completely collapse. They wanted to see it. So we had a black mayor, black council, black police chief, black. And what happened was Detroit, we continued to stay relevant, even at that point, until a lot of the corruption set in. That's how they always have gotten us. They've always pulled our talented people to the side, our talented politicians, and they've seduced them with their individual success. And then they start replicating some of the same mistakes and things that they see, like the brother said, white people doing. And it ends up undermining, you know, what we have going. So, yeah, we saw that happening in Detroit. And I think exactly what Brother William just said as well, which is, that's why the spiritual and the moral base is necessary. You know, we know that the restrictive law is our success, and that's a reason for that, because if we can build this way of life on top of a spiritual base, you know, that's our success. So I agree.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. On that note, we can't talk about politics in Detroit without talking about our our brother, young brother who's incarcerated now for quote-unquote corruption.
Yeah, Kwame, the mayor, Kwame. Kilpatrick.
Yeah, is he still incarcerated?
He still is. You know, they were supposed to let him out this three times. So we've heard news that on three occasions, twice during the pandemic, that he was going to get out. And each time the public was excited and they decided to change courses, they didn't let him out.
Yeah, so I see him as a political prisoner, because they know how much potential that brother has.
That's right. That's exactly right. You know, because they're afraid. See, they didn't calculate that he was going to be the person he turned out to be, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They thought they were going to be able to control the brother, and they couldn't. And so they literally took him out of the public for that reason. He didn't do anything that would warrant him even being put in jail at all. And, you know, I could go into that, but I don't think that that's, you know, necessarily what we wanted to talk about. But, yes, he's still in prison. The president had promised some of the state politicians that he was going to pardon Kwame Kilpatrick, and he's failed to do it up to this day. So people were looking for him to get out. They even had a release date. It didn't happen. So
wow.
Yep.
Inshallah. Well, we now are being joined by Dr. Ridgely. Assalamualaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. Very good show. I'm sorry, Brother Leroy. Very good information.
Yes, sir.
And you touched on some things that I want to emphasize, the word corruption. Well, the word corruption is usually, in politics, linked to money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the reasons, you know, Mr. Farrakhan in 2019 at the Encobra in Detroit, he mentioned that we're going to step by step take over the states in the South, first politically by bringing more people moving there, and we using the vote to politically take over, and then to use the power of the office to start economic development.
Right.
Now, what many people don't have not done, which I have and do, is I always look at the economics.
Mm-hmm.
I know Winston-Salem, North Carolina, my hometown, it was built up based on the tobacco industry, in particular R.J. Reynolds. And R.J. Reynolds, one of his major cigarettes was the Camel cigarettes. And they went down to South Carolina and brought black people up here by the train load into Winston-Salem and located them in what everybody called Camel Town. So they actually developed a community for their workers to live in because it's all centered around cigarettes. In Detroit, Ford, Henry Ford, set up a town.
That's
in Detroit. And he brought black folks in as well when other people were not hiring blacks. He was.
That's right.
So in terms of getting black folks to move close to the farm or down to the farm or in Georgia or whatever, the key is how do people go make money? Because towns are not set up outside of the reason towns are set up. In ancient Kemet,
right.
It was designated by a cross inside of a circle. That cross was not a religious symbol. It was similar to crossroads. In other words, the trading town.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You first got to have product
mm-hmm.
that you're producing, and then you trade. And that's how towns are developed and later become cities, like New York City. New York City doesn't have a lot of manufacturing plants. But because of the port and the ports and their trading, it became a trading center and a financial center, but it's based around trading, not manufacturing themselves. They did a lot of the Jews did a lot of clothing manufacturing, but it was mostly developed because of trade and commerce. So what I'm saying is this. When you are in a political position, mayor, city council, county commissioners, you have a tax base and you have a law base, tax base. You are going to do some building, some fixing roads, okay, et cetera. So you got to have contracts. So the city don't build the streets. They contract with some people who are going to do the work with a contractor, construction contractor. And mm-hmm. so it's big money as to who's in office, it's who's going to get those contracts.
Absolutely.
And so that's the Farrakhan brought out, then we will be able to control that money base, that taxes, and then use the money to pay our own people. And have them do their own business, and we contract with them, and that would be a way of economic development.
Mm-hmm.
So the other aspect is that the reason we fought based on the road is that it was not a big deal about the roads until we set up the Stable Goods Project. Okay? Yes, it was inconvenient when it rained, but most of our activity was in the fields, and it wasn't. We didn't be going, you know, back and forth two or three times. We didn't have people visiting us. We didn't have truckers that needed to come in to bring us supplies and we could ship out stuff. We weren't doing that. But when we moved into another aspect of value added and trade and commerce with the Stable Goods Project, then the quality of the road became an issue. Because trucking companies would not come down that road. It became an issue. So for economic purposes, I had to run. Most of our people have been taken out of economic purposes. Most of our people are simply work on jobs, and when they think of community, they think about a safe place to live. Okay? Because they're not talking about the importance of the zoning of the streets for economic development. They're just looking at a safe place to live. So they think about, let's have a community so we can have our own culture, we have our own safe place to live, we can have our own parties, we can, you know, dress as we like to dress, et cetera, et cetera. But the real issue is how you go eat, and that is always the determining factor. So when you put people in office, of course those people who have money will come and buy those people for purposes of directing the economic development in their favor. But we don't have an economy to develop. I mean, we don't have an economy. All that we do is we work, we get money, and we spend the money. Okay?
Yeah.
We don't have trade and commerce and manufacturing. So we can't buy people. Okay? But the enemy has manufacturing. He has other businesses. Well, he needs favorable tax breaks, favorable infrastructure development, et cetera. So he will buy people, politicians, so that he can have his way economically. But we're not involved in economics. We're not involved in business. They ran us out of business. And then with the riots, they burned down those businesses. And
I'll
just tell you, in COVID-19, with the shutdown, is knocking down 50% of black businesses. They're going bankrupt. Okay? Again, we don't think economically. We think culturally. We think safety. Because they got us scared all the damn time with, you know, us shooting one another and them shooting us. So we think about safety all the time, but not about economic development. And we know that when you get into economic development, you know, somebody get hurt. Like down here in Georgia, you threaten them, they will pay another black person who then got in some type of straits to kill you. Just grab black folks and lynch them like they used to. Okay? They buy people to kill you. But it's to block you from interfering with their businesses, their economy, their farms. So, again, we don't think about business. We think about jobs and behavior. Go ahead, brother.
Yes, sir. So how much does politics affect, or how does it affect economics? For example, if you had, you were campaigning and you were saying that if you had won county commissioners, you could have affected how the tax base could be controlled, and also possibly the contracts that come to the county. Politicians can attract contracts, which in turn makes jobs. So is that something that's realistic?
Well, I've been over the years, I've gone to the county commissioner meetings. Because, you know, I go there ostensibly to complain about the roads, but while I'm there, I listen of what's going on around me. And I've heard it said by the chairman of the county commissioners when it's brought up about some business coming into the county. And he said, we don't want that type of business here.
Okay.
Okay. Me talking to people said over the years they have stopped any manufacturing company from coming into Terrell County. Now, they have the ability to do that because you got to get licenses. You got to get permits, okay? And so they can just not offer, institute you a license, or they can say that what you're doing is not in our – economic development plan, and they can. We're not going to change that in the zoning that is presently in. And like I said, agricultural is agricultural land. You want to buy it and put it in a manufacturing plant. Well, I said that's zone agriculture, and so we're not going to change the zoning. So you just simply cannot come because you got no place to put the building. Okay, so but we, because we're not involved in economics, we don't understand the power of the county commissioner, of the city council, of the mayor. We really don't understand. And many of us, we run for office based on what we think is power.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't even know what that position has the power to do or not do. So we get in there, and before we really understand the significance of what we're doing, we get approached by people who do, and they trick us into doing things that are not beneficial because we didn't know actually how things work. We didn't know how the system worked. We didn't know how the businesses work. We didn't know the power of the zoning. We didn't know the value of a good road versus a bad road in terms of economic development. So, again, everything until for us, everybody else on planet Earth thinks economically, okay, except we. We don't think economically. We think culturally. We think about party. We think socially. Okay, because economics, we've been told, you better not go into that. They have lynched black folks, and the lynching that they did was not about no white woman. It's been proven now through research. It was about stopping economic development. It was about stopping invention, stopping us from inventing, stopping us from taking those inventions and starting manufacturing products, stopping us from growing food and distributing food to ourselves to make a living. That's why they lynched us, was to take us out of business. And now we don't even think about business because we have an engram against being lynched. We have an engram against competing with massa. And we know without anybody telling us, don't step over that line. Don't step over that line. You mess with massa's money, you'll get us all in trouble.
Yep.
Okay? So we don't even think economically. Okay? For instance, I have never, maybe you all can correct me, I have never seen in a movie or on television the mention of the county commission. You hear about mayors, you hear about sheriffs, you hear about city council, but I have yet to see that the word, the name county commission ever brought up. And the budget of the county commission is bigger than most of the cities in the county. And the power of the county commissioners in terms of controlling economic development is the key, because your city, Detroit, what county is Detroit in?
Wayne County.
Well, Wayne County has a county commission. And yes, if something wants to come to Detroit, it's got to come to Wayne County. And so Wayne County can block it. You understand? Wayne County can block something coming to Detroit. Detroit cannot block something coming to Wayne County. Okay? But Wayne County can block stuff coming to Detroit. And like you said about how they did, Brother William talking about how they did up in Gary, Indiana, how the state legislation, how they cut the money back. Well, you think cut the money back at the state, but also the county commissioners in the county can cut their money off. So even though Brother Gary was the mayor of Gary, Indiana, what was the county that he was in? Who were the county commissioners at this time? What was the relationship between Mayor Hatcher and the county commissioners? See, we don't even know to ask those questions because they hide the county commissioners out of sight, out of mind. So you don't even think about it. And because I am in a rural setting where I have to deal with, you know, space and time and products and distance and employees and stuff, okay, I have to get involved with the economics and therefore politics. But if I was just down here working on a job, as long as I had this job guaranteed until I retired, I ain't worried about nothing else. And so when they come around and tell me to vote for somebody, you know, I go wherever I think the flow goes. You know what I mean? Oh, yeah, he was a good basketball player. You know, when he was in high school, everybody knew him. Yeah, I vote for him. You know what I mean? That's how they operate, because we are not in business. And unfortunately, most of us ain't even thinking about getting in business.
Yes, sir. You know, Dr. Ridgely, I say this, and I know you're closing out. That brings to mind an argument that's had in a lot of cities versus about central planning versus decentralized planning, because nowadays there's so much apathy. So many people are disconnected from what's happening to them economically in the real life of how they live, that central planners, people at the top, are planning almost every aspect of their life for them. And people are complaining that, well, give us a chance to plan some for ourselves. But how can we when you become so disconnected, you don't even think in terms of what you need, how much of it you need. And I think that's why we have to figure out a way to get that back. Because as long as we are subject to somebody else's plans, we're never going to be in the front line of somebody else's plan. You know, they're going to put themselves in the front.
Well, you're not going to plan unless you have an economic plan. You know,
right.
The only planning is about economics. And if you are not trying to develop businesses and manufacturing and jobs, if you that's not on the front forefront of your mind. But there's no need to get into central planning or decentralized planning, because planning is all about who's going to benefit where. This is why they do these long-term plans, and we don't know nothing about it. We buy property,
mm-hmm.
and then they come back and they confiscate and run a highway through it. But they knew about that 20 years ago, but you didn't when you bought the property.
Right.
Okay? Because you were not involved in the politics that developed the plan. And I hear my girl Gaina in the background.
No,
so we will survive.
Arrested Development this time.
Oh, there's Arrested Development. Oh, I like Gaina. But anyway, we'll do Arrested Development. But thank you very much, Brother LeRoy, for being on.
Sir.
We appreciate you. We'll be back with you.
Yes, sir. I'll pray to try live. I always love talking, you know, with my family.
So, Brother LeRoy, do you have a shameless plug or anything you want to do that you want to put out for yourself or you would? Trying to solicit any real estate customers?
I'll say, brother, is this, you know, and I'll say it carefully. You know, we've been taught well, and our time is now. I don't think the conditions could be any better for us to achieve the goal of separation and building our own communities than now. Just never been a better time. So, inshallah, but I hope, you know, we can all do what we aim to do, where we want to do it. And, you know, and I'm united with you all, and I pray to Allah that we can build on what we've talked about in the past.
Praise be to Allah. Thank you very much, Brother LeRoy. May Allah bless you and your brothers and sisters, your families in
Thank
Detroit.
You.
All right.
May Allah bless you all as well. Alaykum salam.
Down to Holly Springs. Razadon and Baba, they went down to Peachtree. Headliner, I challenge you to a game of horseshoes. A game of horseshoes!
Now I see the importance of history. Why my people be in the mess that they be. Many journeys to freedom made in vain. By brothers on the corner playing ghetto games. I ask you, Lord, why you enlighten me without the enlightenment of all my folks. Instead, cause I set myself on a quest for truth, and he was there to quench my thirst. But I am still thirsty.